the bushes, but by the time he approached my hiding place, I was gone, deep in the woods that lay beyond the park. My panic kept me running. When the woods petered out into a neighborhood filled with dogs and children, I avoided human contact and did my best to stay in the foliage. I was far from town when I finally doubled back, taking comfort in the fact that my ally, darkness, was descending from the sky. When the smell of dozens of dogs drifted toward me, I turned in that direction, curious. A volley of barking was coming from the back of a large building, a couple of dogs in cages howling at each other. A shift in the wind, and they were barking at me, the timbre in their voices changing. I had been here before. This was where the nice man, the vet, took care of me when I was Bailey. It was, in fact, the very last place I had ever been with Ethan. I decided to give the place a wide berth. I scooted around to the front of the building, and as I crossed the driveway, I stopped dead, quivering. When I was Bailey, a new baby donkey named Jasper had joined old Unreliable Flair in the yard one day. Jasper grew up to be much smaller than a horse, but was built along similar lines, and he made Grandpa laugh and Grandma shake her head. I'd been nose to nose with Jasper. I'd sniffed him carefully when Grandpa brushed him. I'd played with him as best as I could. I knew Jasper's smell like I knew the farm, and there was no mistaking that scent now, right here in the driveway. Tracking back toward the building, I could find a concentrated area in the parking lot where the scent was overwhelming and fresh. There was even a dusting of straw and dirt with Jasper painted all over it, lying thick in the gravel. The dogs were still baying at me, outraged that I was free while they were penned, but I ignored the racket. Drinking in the rich mixture of smells in the dirt, I trailed down the driveway and out into the road. The first time a car rushed up behind me, honking as its lights played out into the night, I was startled, so focused was I on following Jasper's scent. I veered into the ditch by the side of the road, cringing from the accusatory wail of the car as it sailed past. After that, I was more careful. While I was focused on Jasper, my ears were aware of the sounds of automobiles, and I slunk away from them long before their lights picked me up. Though the track was long, it was easier than find Wally. For more than an hour, I traced in a straight line, finally making a left turn and then another. Jasper's scent was weaker the farther I went, which meant I was trailing him backward and that there was a danger I might lose him altogether. But after a right turn, I no longer needed the scent. I knew where I was. Right here was where the train crossed the road, the train that had stopped Ethan's car the first day he'd left to do college. I picked up the pace, Jasper's scent validating the instinctive turn I took to the right. Soon I was passing Hannah's house, which curiously emitted no scent of the girl herself, though the trees and the moss-covered brick wall by the road were still the same. Turning up the driveway to the farm was such a natural move, it felt as if I had just been there yesterday. Jasper's smell tracked right up to a large white trailer, a pile of grit and hay beneath it. His odors were painted everywhere, and there was a new horse watching me with drowsy suspicion as I sniffed along the fence. But I was no longer interested in horses. Ethan. I could smell Ethan. He was everywhere. The boy must still live on the farm. Never before in my entire existence had I felt the joyous excitement that coursed through me then. I was dizzy with it. The lights were on in the house, and as I circled around to the side, staying on the small grassy hill, I could see through the window into the living room. A man Grandpa's age sat in a chair, watching television, but he didn't look like Grandpa. Ethan was not in the room, nor was anyone else. The dog door was still there in the outer metal door, but the big wooden door on the inside was firmly shut. Frustrated, I scratched at the metal door, then barked. I heard vibrations within the house as someone approached. My tail was wagging so hard I couldn't sit down. It pulled my whole body back and forth. The light blinked on overhead, and the wooden door made a familiar scratching sound before it eased open. The man I'd seen sitting in the chair stood on the threshold, frowning down at me through the glass. I scratched again at the metal. I wanted him to let me in so I could run in and be with the boy. "Hey," he said, his voice muffled by the closed door. "Stop that." I heard the rebuke and tried to sit obediently, but my butt bounced right back up. "What do you want?" he asked finally. I heard the question in his voice, wondered what he was asking me. Then I realized I didn't have to wait for him to make up his mind. With the inner door open, the dog door was free. I lowered my head and pushed through the plastic curtain, bursting into the house. "Hey!" the old man shouted, surprised. I was surprised, too. The second I was in the house, I clearly smelled the person blocking my way. I knew who he was. I would recognize that scent anywhere. Unmistakably, Ethan. I'd found the boy. Chapter 30. Though Ethan was standing, I tried to leap into his lap. I lunged up, straining to lick him, nuzzle him, climb on him. I couldn't stop the sobs coming from my throat. I couldn't keep my tail from flying. "Hey!" he said, backing away and blinking. He tried to steady himself on his cane, and then he sat down heavily on the floor. I jumped on him, licking his face. He pushed my mouth away. "Okay, okay," he grumbled. "Stop it, okay?" The feel of his hands on my face was the most wonderful sensation I'd ever encountered in my life. I half closed my eyes with the pleasure of it. "Get back now, get back," he said. The boy laboriously climbed back to his feet. I pressed my face into his hand, and he briefly stroked me. "Okay. Goodness, who are you?" He snapped on another light, peering at me. "Whoa, you're a skinny one. Doesn't anybody feed you? Huh? Are you lost or something?" I could sit there all night and just listen to his voice and feel his gaze on me, but it wasn't to be. "Well, look, you can't come inside." He opened the outer door and held it. "Out now. Go on outside." It was a command I recognized, so reluctantly I went. He stood and looked at me through the glass. I sat expectantly. "You're going to have to go home, dog," he said. I wagged. I knew I was go home. I was finally go home, on the farm where I belonged, with Ethan where I belonged. He shut the door. I waited obediently until the strain was just too much and then yipped a bark full of impatience and frustration. When there was no response, I yipped again, giving the metal door a good pawing as well. I'd lost count of how many times I'd barked when the door opened again. Ethan was carrying a metal pan, succulent odors wafting off of it. "Here," he muttered. "You hungry, buddy?" As soon as he set the pan down, I dove into the dinner, bolting the food. "It's mostly lasagna. I don't have much in the way of dog food around here. You look like you're not fussy, though." I wagged. "You can't live here, though. I can't have a dog. I don't have time for it. You're going to have to go home." I wagged. "Good Lord, when was the last time you ate? Don't eat so fast, you'll make yourself sick." I wagged. When I was done, Ethan bent slowly down to pick up the pan. I licked his face. "Yuck! You have really bad breath, you know then?" He wiped his sleeve on his face and stood back up. I watched him, ready to do anything he wanted. Go for a walk? Go for a car ride? Play with the stupid flip? "Okay, then. You go on home. Dog like you obviously isn't a mutt. Somebody must be looking for you. Okay? Good night." Ethan shut the door. I sat there for a few minutes. When I barked, the light over my head went off with a click. I went around to the small grassy hill by the side of the house and looked into the living room. Ethan was moving slowly across the floor, leaning on his cane, turning off one light after another. My boy was so old, I never would have recognized him. But now that I knew it was him, the gait was familiar, if more stiff, and the way he turned his head and peered out into the night before snapping off the final lamp, ears cocked as if listening for something, was pure Ethan. I was confused over being an outside dog, but the food in my belly and the exhaustion in my limbs soon overtook me, and I curled up on the spot, tucking my nose near my tail, even though the night was warm. I was home. When Ethan came outside the next morning, I shook myself off and ran over to him, trying to restrain myself from showering so much affection on him. He stared at me. "Why are you still here, huh, boy? What are you doing here?" I followed him into the barn, where he led a horse I'd never seen before out into the yard. Naturally, the dumb animal didn't react when he saw me, just gazed at me the way Flair used to. No comprehension registering. "I'm a dog, you idiot." I marked the yard while Ethan gave the horse some oats. "How are you doing today, Troy? You miss Jasper, don't you? You miss your pal, Jasper." Ethan was talking to the horse, which I could have told him was a complete waste of time. He stroked the horse's nose, calling him Troy, and mentioning the name Jasper more than once, though when I went into the barn, the donkey wasn't there, just his smell. Jasper's scent was particularly strong in the trailer. "That was a sad day. The day I had to take Jasper in. He lived a good long time, though. 44 is pretty old for a little donkey." I felt sorrow in Ethan and nuzzled his hand. He regarded me absently, his mind somewhere else. He gave Troy a final pat and went back into his house. A few hours later, I was sniffing around the yard, waiting for Ethan to come out to play, when a truck swung up into the driveway. As soon as it stopped, I recognized it as the one I'd seen in the parking lot of the dog park, and the man who eased himself out of the front seat was the same policeman I'd smelled who'd been probing the bushes with the pole and noose, which he now grabbed from the back of the truck.
"You won't need that,"
Ethan called, stepping outside. I turned from the man and went wagging over to my boy.
"He's really cooperative."
"Just wandered up last night?"
the policeman replied.
"That's right. Look at the ribs on the poor animal. You can tell he's a purebred, but someone sure hasn't been treating him right."
"We've heard reports of a nice-looking Labrador running loose down at the city park. Wonder if this is the same one,"
the policeman said.
"Don't know about that. Pretty far,"
Ethan replied dubiously. The man opened a cage on the back of his truck.
"You think he'll just go in? I'm not in a mood to chase him down."
"Hey, dog. Up here, okay? Up here."
Ethan patted the inside of the open cage. I regarded him curiously for a moment, and then gave a little leap, landing lightly inside. If that's what the boy wanted me to do, that's what I'd do. I would do anything for my boy.
"Appreciate it," the policeman said.
He swung the cage door shut.
"So, what happens now?"
Ethan asked.
"Oh, dog like that will be adopted out pretty easy, I imagine."
"Well, Would they call me, let me know? He's a really nice animal. I'd like to know he's okay.
I don't know about that. You'll have to call the shelter, ask them to notify you. My job is just to pick them up.
That's what I'll do, then.
The policeman and the boy shook hands. Ethan came over to my cage as the policeman slid into the front of the truck. I put my nose up against the bars, trying to make contact, breathing in Ethan's scent.
"You take care of yourself, okay, buddy?" Ethan said softly. "You need a nice home with kids to play with. I'm just an old man."
I was astounded when we drove off, Ethan still standing there, watching us go. I couldn't help myself. I started barking, and I barked and barked all the way down the driveway and down the road past Hannah's and beyond. This new development left me bewildered and heartbroken. Why was I being taken from Ethan? Was he sending me away? When would I see him again? I wanted to be with my boy. I was taken to a building full of dogs, many of whom barked with fear all day long. I was put in a cage by myself, and within a day I was wearing a stupid plastic collar and had a familiar pain in my groin. Was this why I was here? When was Ethan coming to take me for the car ride home? Every time someone passed my cage, I leaped to my feet, expecting it to be the boy. As the days wore on, I sometimes gave voice to my frustration, joining the non-stop chorus of barking that rang off the walls. Where was Ethan? Where was my boy? The people who fed me and took care of me were gentle and kind, and I have to admit that I so craved human contact, I went to them whenever one of them opened my cage, offering my head for stroking. When a family with three young girls came to visit me in a small room, I climbed into their laps and rolled on my back, so desperate was I to feel human hands on my body.
"Can we keep him, Daddy?"
one of the girls asked. The affection pouring off the three children made me squirm. "He is as black as coal," the mother of the family said. "Coley," the father said. He held my head, looking at my teeth, and then lifted my front paws one by one. I knew what this meant. I'd been through this type of examination before. A cold fear grew in my stomach. No, I couldn't go home with these people. I belonged to the boy.
"Coley, Coley,"
the girls chanted. I regarded them numbly, their adoration no longer welcome.
"Let's go to lunch," the man said.
"Daddy!"
"But then when we're done, we'll come back and take Coley for a car ride," he finished.
"Yay!"
I heard the words "car ride" clearly, but was relieved when, after a lot more hugging from the girls, the family left. I was put back in my cage and curled up for a nap, a little mystified. I remembered when Maya and I did school, how it was my job to sit and let children pet me. Maybe this was the same thing, only now the children would be coming to me. I didn't mind. What was important was that I'd been wrong. The family had not been here to take me away with them. I would wait for my boy. Human motivation is unfathomable to dogs, so I wasn't sure why the two of us were separated, but I knew that when the time came, Ethan would find me.
"Good news, boy. You've got a new home,"
the woman who fed me said as she passed in a bowl of fresh water. "They'll be back soon, and we'll get you out of this place for good." I knew it wouldn't take long. I wagged and let her scratch my ears, licking her hand, sharing her happy spirits. "Yes," I thought in reply to her good mood, "I am still here." "I'm going to call that man who brought you in. He'll be happy to hear we found you a good family." When she left, I circled around a few times and settled down for a nap, back to waiting patiently for the boy. Half an hour later, I sat bolt upright out of my sleep. A man's voice had just come to me, an angry voice. "Ethan." I barked.
"My dog, My property. I've changed my mind," he was shouting. I stopped barking and held perfectly still. I could sense him on the other side of the wall, and I stared at the door, willing it to open, so I could smell him. And a minute later, it did. The woman who had given me water, leading the boy down the hallway. I put my paws up on the cage, wagging. The woman was furious. I could sense it. "Those children are going to be so disappointed," she said. She opened my cage, and I lunged out, crushing myself against the boy, wagging and licking and whimpering. The woman's anger left her as she watched. "Well, then," she said. "My goodness." Ethan stood at the counter for a few minutes, writing something down, while I sat patiently at his feet and tried not to paw him. Then we were outside the door and in the front seat of the car for a car ride. Though it had been a long time since I'd had the wonderful thrill of a car ride with my nose out the window, what I wanted most was to put my head in Ethan's lap and feel his hand stroke me. So that's what I did.
"You really do forgive me, don't you, buddy?"
I gave him an alert look.
"I put you in jail, and you don't care at all."
We drove a bit in comfortable silence. I wondered if we were headed to the farm.
"You are a good dog," the boy finally said. I wagged with pleasure. "Okay, well, let's stop and get you some dog food."
Eventually, we did go back to the farm, and this time, when Ethan opened the front door to the house, he held it open for me so I could trot right in. That night, after dinner, I lay at his feet, more content than I could ever remember being.
"Sam," he said to me.
I raised my head expectantly.
"Max. No. Winston? Murphy."
I wanted so much to please him, but I had no idea what he was asking of me. I found myself wishing he would command me to find. I loved the idea of demonstrating the kind of work I could do.
"Bandit. Tucker."
Oh, I knew what this was about. I gazed at him expectantly, waiting for him to make up his mind.
"Trooper? Lad. Buddy?"
There, I knew that word. I barked, and he started in surprise.
"Whoa, is that your name? Did they used to call you Buddy?"
I wagged.
"Well, okay, Buddy. Buddy. Your name is Buddy."
By the next day, I was fully comfortable responding to Buddy. It was my new name.
"Here, Buddy," he would call. "Sit, Buddy. Well, hey, somebody trained you pretty well, looks like. Wonder how you came to find yourself here. Were you abandoned?"
For the most part, I was afraid to leave Ethan's side that first day. I was surprised when he went to Grandpa and Grandma's room to sleep, but didn't hesitate when he patted the mattress, jumping up on the soft bed and stretching out in a groan of pure luxury. Ethan got out of bed several times that night to use the bathroom, and I loyally went with him on each occurrence, standing in the doorway while he did his business.
"You don't have to follow me every time, you know," he told me.
He also didn't sleep in as late as he used to, but was up with the sunrise, fixing both of us a breakfast.
"Well, Buddy, I'm semi-retired now," Ethan said. "I still have a few clients I consult with, and I've got a phone call scheduled with one of them this morning. But after that, we've got the day free. I was thinking the two of us should work in the garden today. That sound good to you?"
I wagged. I liked the name Buddy, I decided. After breakfast, I had toast. The boy talked on the phone, so I explored the house. Upstairs felt little used. The rooms held a musty odor, with barely any evidence of Ethan's presence. His room was still the same, but Mom's room had no furniture and was full of boxes.
A downstairs closet was firmly shut, but as I sniffed along the bottom crack, a familiar scent wafted out. The flip.
Chapter 31. There was a sadness in the boy, a deep hurt that was new to him and far more substantial than the pain that had settled in his leg.
"It's just me living here. I don't know who you're looking for," Ethan told me as I examined every corner of the house. "I always meant to get married. Came close to it a couple of times, in fact, but it never seemed to work out. Lived with a woman in Chicago for a few years, even."
The boy stood and stared sightlessly out the window, and the sadness in him increased.
"John Lennon said that life's what happens when you're making other plans. I guess that sums it up pretty much."
I went over to him and sat, lifting a paw to press against his thigh. He dropped his gaze down to me, and I wagged.
"Well, hey, buddy, let's get you a collar."
We went upstairs to his bedroom, and he pulled a box down off of a shelf.
"Let's see. Okay, here it is."
A jangle sounded from the box as Ethan lifted a collar out of the box and shook it. The noise was so familiar, I shivered. As Bailey, I had made that same jangling sound whenever I had moved.
"This used to belong to my other dog, a long, long time ago. Bailey."
I wagged at the name. He showed it to me, and I sniffed it, picking up the ever-so-faint scent of another dog. Me, I realized. I was smelling me. It was a very odd sensation. He shook the collar a few times.
"Now, that was a good dog, that Bailey," he said.
He sat for a moment, lost in thought, and then looked at me. When he spoke, his voice was rough, and I felt a surge of strong emotions come from him, sadness and love and regret and mourning.
"I guess maybe we'd better get you your own collar, buddy. It wouldn't be right to make you try to live up to this one. Bailey. Bailey was a pretty special dog."
I was tense when the car ride the next day led us into town. I did not want to go back to the cage in the place with all the barking dogs. But it turned out we were just picking up bags of food and a stiff collar for my neck, to which Ethan affixed some jingling tags when we got home.
"It says, 'My name is Buddy. I belong to Ethan Montgomery,'" he told me, holding one of the tags in his hand. I wagged my tail.
After several such trips to town, I learned to relax my guard. It no longer felt as though Ethan were going to abandon me. I stopped haunting his side and took to wandering around on my own, stretching my territory out to include all of the farm, paying special attention to the mailbox and additional places by the road where other male dogs had been. The pond was still there, and there was still a flock of stupid ducks living on its banks. For all I knew, they were the very same ducks. It hardly mattered. They acted the same when they saw me, jumping into the water in alarm and then swimming back to look at me. I knew there was no point in chasing them, but I did so anyway, just for the sheer joy of it. Ethan spent most of his day on his knees in a big, moist plot of ground behind the house, and I learned that he did not want me lifting my leg in that area. He talked to me while he played with the dirt, so I listened, wagging when I heard my name.
"Soon we'll be going to the farmer's market on Sundays. Now that's a fun time. My tomatoes fetch a pretty price," he said.
One afternoon I got bored with the digging in the dirt game and wandered into the barn. The mysterious black cat was long gone. There was no scent of her left anywhere, and I felt a little disappointed somehow. She was the only cat I'd ever met whom I enjoyed knowing. No, that wasn't really true. though I'd mostly found it irritating, Tinkerbell's unabashed affection for me had ultimately been gratifying. In the back of the barn, I found a pile of old blankets, molding and rotting. When I pushed my nose into them and breathed deep, though, I could very faintly pick up a familiar, comforting smell. Grandpa. This was where we used to come to do our chores together.
"It's good for me to get out, take walks," Ethan told me. "I don't know why I didn't think to get a dog before. I need the exercise."
Some evenings, we'd circle the farm on a well-worn path that smelled of Troy the whole way, and others we'd stroll down the road in one direction or the other. I always felt something from the boy when we passed Hannah's place, though he never stopped or went up to the house to see her. I wondered why I could no longer smell her, and remembered Carly in the dog park, positively covered in Hannah's scent. One such evening, as we passed Hannah's house, I was struck by something that hadn't before occurred to me. The pain I could feel burrow deep inside the boy was very similar to what I had sensed inside Jacob long ago. There was a lonely grief, the sense of having said goodbye to something. Sometimes the mood lifted completely, though. Ethan loved to take his cane and smack it against a ball in the yard, sending it flying down the driveway for me to pursue in return. We played this game often, and I would have worn the pads off my feet to keep him so happy. When I caught the ball on a high bounce, snagging it out of the air like a piece of meat dropped through a fence, he would laugh in delight. Other times, though, the dark swirl of sadness would overtake him.
"I never thought my life would turn out this way," he said to me one afternoon, his voice hoarse. I nuzzled him, trying to cheer him up. "All by myself. No one to share my days with. Made a lot of money, but after a while, the job didn't give me much pleasure, so I more or less quit, and that didn't give me any pleasure either."
I ran and got a ball and spat it into his lap, but he turned his face away, ignoring it, his pain so sharp it made me want to yelp.
"Oh, buddy, things just don't always go as planned," he sighed. I dug my nose after the ball, shoving it up between his legs, and finally was rewarded with a weak toss, which I pounced upon. His heart wasn't in it.
"Good dog, buddy," he said absently. "I guess I don't feel like playing right now."
I was frustrated. I had been a good dog. I had done fine, and I was back with the boy. But he wasn't happy, not the way most people were at the end of find, when Jacob or Maya and the others would give them blankets and food and reunite them with their families. That's when it occurred to me that my purpose in this world had never been just to find. It had been to save. Tracking down the boy was just part of the equation. When I lived with Jacob, he harbored this same dark feeling inside. But when I saw him later, when Maya and I were doing school, he had a family, a child, and a mate. And then he was happy. Happy the same way that Ethan used to be when he and Hannah sat on the front porch and giggled with each other. For Ethan to be rescued, he needed to have a family. He needed a woman and to have a baby with her. Then he would be happy. The next morning, while Ethan worked the dirt, I trotted down the driveway and out onto the road. Though the goat ranch was gone, I'd learned new scent markers on my car rides so that finding my way into town was as easy as touring the back acres of the farm. Once in town, I quickly located the dog park, though I was disappointed Carly was nowhere around. I wrestled with some dogs in the yard, no longer afraid of being spotted by people. I was Ethan's dog now. I was a good dog. I had a collar, and my name was Buddy. Late that afternoon, Carly came bounding up to me, thrilled to see that I was back in the park. As we played, I luxuriated in Hannah's scent,
fresh and strong throughout Carly's fur.
"Well, hello, doggy. I haven't seen you in a while. You sure look handsome,"
the woman on the bench said.
"Glad they started feeding you."
She felt tired, and when she stood after just half an hour, she pressed her hands into her back.
"Whew! I am so ready," she breathed.
She began making her way slowly down the sidewalk, Carly coursing back and forth in front of her. I stuck with Carly, the two of us sending several squirrels scattering in terror. When, after two blocks, the woman turned up a walk and opened the door to a house, I knew better than to follow Carly inside. I settled down on the stoop after the woman shut the door, content to wait. I'd played this game before. A few hours later, a car swung into the driveway, and a woman with white hair slid out of the front seat. I trotted down the steps to meet her.
"Well, hello there, dog. Are you here to play with Carly?"
She greeted me, putting out a friendly hand. I knew the voice before I smelled her. Hannah. My tail wagging, I rolled around at her feet, begging for her hands to touch me. And they did. The door to the house opened.
"Hi, Mom. He followed me home from the dog park,"
the woman said, standing in the doorway. Carly bounded out and tackled me. I shouldered her away. I wanted the girls' attentions right now.
"Well, where do you live, huh, boy?"
Hannah's hands fumbled for my collar, so I sat. Carly shoved her face in the way.
"Look out, Carly,"
Hannah said, pushing Carly's head to the side.
"My name is Buddy,"
Hannah said slowly, holding my tag. I wagged.
"I belong to..."
"Oh, my.
What is it, Mom?" "Ethan Montgomery."
"Who?"
Hannah stood. "Ethan Montgomery. He's a man. He's a man I used to know a long time ago, back when I was growing up."
"Like an old boyfriend, that kind of man?"
"Yes. Well, sort of like that, yes."
Hannah laughed softly.
"My, first boyfriend."
"Your first? Oh, really? And this is his dog?"
"His name is Buddy."
I wagged. Carly chewed on my face.
"Well, what should we do?"
the woman asked from the doorway.
"Do? Oh, I guess we should call him. He lives out near the old place, just down the road from there." "You sure are a long way from home, Buddy."
I'd had enough of Carly, who didn't seem to grasp the whole situation here, and was busy trying to climb on top of me. I snarled at her, and she sat down, her ears back, and then jumped on me again. Some dogs are just too happy for their own good. I had utter faith that Hannah would take me back to the boy, and that when Ethan saw her, the girl would no longer be lost to him. It was complicated, but I was doing a sort of fine show, only it would be up to the two of them to put it all together. Which they did. An hour or so later, Ethan's car pulled into the driveway. I jumped up from where I had Carly pinned to the grass and ran over to him. Hannah was sitting on the stoop, and she stood uncertainly as Ethan got out of the car.
"Buddy, what in the world are you doing here?"
he asked.
"Get in the car."
I bounded into the front seat. Carly put her paws up on the car door, straining to smell me through the window, as if we hadn't been nose to nose for the past 4 hours.
"Carly, get down,"
Hannah said sharply. Carly dropped.
"Oh, it's okay. Hi there, Hannah."
"Hi, Ethan."
They stared at each other a minute, and then Hannah laughed. Awkwardly, they hugged, their faces coming together briefly.
"I have no idea how this happened," the boy said.
"Well, your dog was in the park. My daughter Rachel goes there every afternoon,
She's a week overdue, and the doctor wants her to spend a little time on her feet every day. She'd do jumping jacks if it would help.
Hannah felt nervous to me, but it was nothing like what was happening to Ethan. His heart was pounding so hard I could hear it in his breath. The emotions coming off him were strong and confusing.
That's what I don't understand. I wasn't in town. Buddy must have gone all that way by himself. I have no idea what would make him do such a thing.
Well, Hannah said. They stood there looking at each other.
Would you like to come in? She finally asked. Oh, no, no, I need to get back.
Okay, then.
There was more standing. Carly yawned, sitting down to scratch herself, oblivious to the tension between the two people.
I was going to call you when I heard about... Matthew, I'm sorry for your loss.
Ethan said.
Thank you,
Hannah replied.
That was 15 years ago, Ethan. Long time. I didn't realize it had been so long.
Yes.
So are you visiting for the baby?
Oh, no. I live here now.
You do?
Ethan seemed startled by something, but as I looked around, I saw nothing surprising, except that a squirrel had come down out of the trees and was digging around in the grass a few houses down. Carly was looking the wrong way, I noted with disgust.
I moved back 2 years ago next month. Rachel and her husband are staying with me while they finish adding a room to their place for the baby.
Oh, they'd better hurry,
Hannah said with a laugh.
She's big.
They both laughed. This time, when the laughter stopped, something like sadness came off of Hannah. Ethan's fear bled away, and he, too, seemed overtaken with an odd gloom.
Well, it was nice to see you, Ethan.
It was great to see you, too, Hannah.
Okay. Bye.
She turned to go back into her house. Ethan came around the front of the car. His mood was angry and scared, and sad and conflicted. Carly still didn't see the squirrel. The girl was on the top step. Ethan opened the car door.
Hannah, he called.
She turned. Ethan took a deep, shuddering breath.
I wonder if you'd like to come over for dinner sometime. Might be fun for you. You haven't been to the farm in a long time. I put in a garden. Tomatoes.
His voice trailed off.
You cook now, Ethan?
Well, I heat things up pretty well.
They both laughed, and the sadness lifted from them as if it had never been there.
Chapter 32.
After that day, I saw Hannah and Carly a lot. They came to the farm to play more and more frequently, which was fine by me. Carly understood that the farm was my territory, something she could hardly fail to recognize since I'd lifted my leg on every tree on the place. I was the top dog, and she didn't try to challenge me, though she was irritatingly oblivious to the benefits that the natural order bestowed upon our admittedly small pack. Mostly, she just acted like we were playmates, and nothing more. She was, I concluded, just not very bright. Carly seemed to think that she could catch the ducks if she just crept up on them slowly enough, which was an exercise in pure stupidity. I would watch in utter disgust as she would slink through the grass, her belly in the dirt, moving just inches at a time, while all the while the mother duck watched her with an unblinking eye. Then a quick lunge, a huge splash, and the ducks would be airborne for a few feet, landing just ahead of Carly in the pond. She'd swim for about 15 minutes, working so hard her body would nearly be lifted out of the water, and would bark in frustration whenever she felt she was within biting distance, and the ducks flapped their wings and jumped through the air a few feet out ahead. When Carly finally gave up, the ducks would determinedly swim after her. quacking, and sometimes Carly would spin around and head back out, thinking she had the ducks fooled. I had no patience with any of it. Ethan and I occasionally went to Carly's house, too, but this wasn't as fun, as all there was to do was play in the backyard. The next summer, dozens of people assembled at the farm, sitting in folding chairs to watch me perform a trick I'd first perfected with Maya and Al, which was to walk between the chairs at a slow, dignified pace, this time up to where Ethan had built some raised wooden steps so everyone could see me. He untied something from my back, and he and Hannah talked and kissed, and everyone laughed and applauded at me. After that, Hannah lived with us on the farm. The place was transformed so that it was almost like Maya's mama's house, with people arriving for visits all the time. Ethan brought home a couple more horses to join Troy in the yard, smaller ones, and the children who came to visit loved to ride them, even though, in my opinion, horses are unreliable creatures who will leave you stranded in the forest at the first sign of a snake. Carly's owner, Rachel, soon showed up with a tiny baby named Chase, a little boy who loved to climb on me and grab my fur and giggle. I lay still when this happened, just as I had when Maya and I did school. I was a good dog. Everyone said so. Hannah had three daughters, and each of them had children too, so that at any given time I might have more playmates than I could count. When there were no visitors, Ethan and Hannah often sat out on the front porch, holding hands while the evening air turned cool. I lay at their feet, sighing with contentment. The pain in my boy was gone, replaced by a serene, uplifting happiness. The children who came to visit called him Granddaddy, and each one made his heart soar when they did so. Hannah called him My Love, and Darling, as well as just plain Ethan. About the only thing involved with the new arrangement that was less than perfect was the fact that when Hannah started sleeping with Ethan, I was summarily dismissed from the bed. At first, I assumed this was a mistake. There was, after all, plenty of room for me between them, which was where I preferred to lie. But Ethan ordered me off onto the floor, even though there was nothing wrong with the bed upstairs, and the girl could just as easily sleep there. In fact, after I performed my trick in the yard for all the people to see, Ethan had beds put in all the upstairs rooms, even Grandma's sewing room, but apparently none of them were good enough for Hannah. Just to test it, though, every single night I put my paws on the bed and slowly raised myself up, like Carly inching through the weeds toward the ducks. And every night, Ethan and Hannah would laugh. "No, buddy, you get down," Ethan would say. "You can't blame him for trying," Hannah often replied. When the snow fell, Hannah and Ethan would put a blanket over themselves and sit and talk in front of the fire. When it was Happy Thanksgiving or Merry Christmas, the house would be so full of people, I often felt in danger of being stepped on, and I could have my pick of beds where the children were delighted to have me sleep with them. My favorite child was Rachel's boy, Chase, who reminded me a little of Ethan, the way he hugged me and loved me. When Chase stopped trying to walk on all fours like a dog and started running on two legs, he liked to explore the farm with me while Carly fruitlessly hunted ducks. I was a good dog. I had fulfilled my purpose. Lessons I had learned from being feral had taught me how to escape and how to hide from people when it was necessary, scavenging for food from trash containers. Being with Ethan had taught me love and taught me my most important purpose, which was taking care of my boy. Jacob and Maya had taught me to find, show, and most important of all, how to save people. And it was all of these things, everything I had learned as a dog, that had led me to find Ethan and Hannah and to bring them both together. I understood it now, why I had lived so many times. I had to learn a lot of important skills and lessons so that when the time came, I could rescue Ethan, not from the pond, but from the sinking despair of his own life. The boy and I still walked around the farm in the evenings, usually with Hannah, but not always. I craved the alone time with Ethan when he would talk to me, his gait slow and careful on the uneven path.
What a great time we all had this week. Didn't you have fun, buddy?
Sometimes he used his cane to smack the ball down the driveway, and I would joyously tear after it, chewing it a little before dropping it at his feet for another whack.
You're such a great dog, buddy. I don't know what I would do without you,
Ethan said on one such evening. He took a deep breath, turning to survey the farm, waving at a picnic table full of children who waved back.
Hi, Granddaddy,
they shouted. His sheer enjoyment, his love of life, made me bark with delight. He turned back to me, laughing.
Ready for another one, buddy?
He asked me, raising his cane to hit the ball again. Chase wasn't the last baby to join the family. They just kept coming. Chase was about the age Ethan had been when I first met him, when his mother, Rachel, brought home a little girl they variously called the Surprise, the Last One for Sure, and Kirsten. As usual, they held the baby down for me to sniff, and as usual, I tried to be appreciative. I never knew what they expected from me under these circumstances.
"Let's go play ball, buddy,"
Chase suggested. Now that I could respond to. One beautiful spring day, I was home alone with Ethan, napping drowsily while he read a book in the warm sunlight streaming through the picture window. Hannah had just left in the car, and at that particular moment, our home was uncharacteristically empty of visiting family members. Suddenly, my eyes snapped open. I turned and looked at Ethan, who met my gaze curiously.
"What did you hear, buddy?"
he asked me.
"Did a car pull up?"
There was something wrong with the boy. I could sense it. With a slight whimper, I got to my feet. Anxiety washed through me. He'd gone back to his book, but laughed in surprise when I put my paws on the couch, as if to climb on top of him.
"Whoa, buddy, what are you doing?"
The sense of impending disaster increased. I barked helplessly.
"Are you okay? Do you need to go out?"
He gestured toward the dog door, then pulled his glasses off and rubbed his eyes.
"Whew, a little dizzy there."
I sat. He blinked, looking off into the distance.
"Tell you what, old boy, let's you and me go back and take a nap."
He got to his feet, swaying unsteadily. Panting nervously, I followed him back to the bedroom. He sat on the bed and groaned.
"Oh,"
he said. Something tore inside of his head. I could feel it. He sank back, sucking in a deep breath. I jumped on top of the bed, but he didn't say anything, just stared at me glassy-eyed. There was nothing for me to do. I nuzzled his slack hand, fearfully conscious of the strange forces loose inside him. His breathing was shallow, shuddering. After an hour, he stirred. Something was still really wrong with him, but I could feel him gathering his resources, struggling to break free of whatever gripped him, the way I had once struggled to find the surface of the cold water from the storm drain when I had the little boy Jeffrey in my teeth.
"Oh,"
Ethan panted.
"Oh, Hannah."
More time passed. I whined softly, feeling the fight continue within him. Then his eyes opened. At first they were unfocused, confused, and then they lit upon me, widening.
"Why, hello, Bailey,"
he shocked me by saying.
"How have you been? I've missed you, dog."
His hand groped for my fur.
"Good dog, Bailey,"
he said. It wasn't a mistake. Somehow, he knew. these magnificent creatures with their complex minds were capable of so much more than a dog, and the sure conviction coming from him now let me know that he had put it all together. He was looking at me and seeing Bailey.
How about the day of the go-karts, hey, Bailey? We sure did show them that day. We sure did.
I wanted to let him know that, yes, I was Bailey. I was his one and only dog, and that I understood that whatever was happening inside him was letting him see me as I truly was. It dawned on me how I might do this, and in a flash I was off the bed and down the hall. I reached up and grabbed the knob to the closet, just the way my first mother had taught me, and the old mechanism turned easily in my mouth, the door popping open. I nosed it aside and dove into the pile of musty things at the bottom, tossing aside boots and umbrellas until I had it in my mouth. The flip. When I jumped back on the bed and dropped the thing in his hand, Ethan started as if I had just awakened him.
Wow! Bailey, you found the flip. Where did you get this, boy?
I licked his face.
Well, now, let's just see.
What he did next was the last thing I wanted. His body trembling with the effort, he hauled himself over to the window, which had been cracked open to admit the fresh air.
Okay, Bailey, get the flip, he called.
With an awkward motion, he managed to fumble the flip onto the windowsill and push it outside. I didn't want to leave his side, not even for a second, but I couldn't disobey him when he repeated his command. My toenails scrabbling on the carpet, I bounded across the living room floor and out the dog door, peeling around the side of the house and scooping the flip up from the bushes where it had fallen. I spun and raced back to the house, resenting every second the stupid flip was keeping me apart from my boy. When I returned to the bedroom, I saw that things had taken a turn for the worse. Ethan had sat on the floor where he had been standing, and his eyes were unfocused, his breathing labored. I spat out the object I'd brought him. The time for that had passed. Carefully, so as not to hurt him, I crept forward, putting my head in his lap. He would be leaving me soon. I could hear it in the slowing of his raspy breathing. My boy was dying. I could not join him on his journey and did not know where it would lead him. People are vastly more complicated than dogs and served a much more important purpose. The job of a good dog was ultimately to be with them, remaining by their sides no matter what course their lives might take. All I could do now was offer him comfort, the assurance that as he left this life, he was not alone, but rather was tended by the dog who loved him more than anything in the whole world. His hand, weak and trembling, touched the fur above my neck.
"I will miss you, Doodle Dog,"
Ethan said to me. I put my face to his. I felt his breath and tenderly licked his face while he struggled to focus his gaze on me. Eventually, he gave up, his eyes sliding away. I didn't know if he saw me now as Bailey or Buddy, but it didn't matter. I was his dog, and he was my boy. I felt the consciousness ebb from him as gradually as daylight leaves the sky after sunset. There was no pain, no fear, nothing but the sense that my brave boy was going where he was supposed to go. Through it all, I could feel him aware of me lying in his lap, until with one last shuddering breath, he was aware of nothing at all. I lay there quietly with my boy in the stillness of that spring afternoon, the house silent and empty. Soon the girl would be home, and remembering how hard it had been for everyone to say goodbye to Bailey and Ellie and even the cats. I knew she would need my help to face life without the boy. As for me, I loyally remained right where I was, remembering the very first time I had ever seen the boy, and then, just now, the very last time, and all the times in between. The deep aching grief I knew I would feel would come soon enough, but at that moment, mostly what I felt was peace, secure in the knowledge that by living my life the way I had, everything had come down to this moment. I had fulfilled my purpose. This concludes A Dog's Purpose.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.